We'll start from where we left in the morning. We can start from your questions.
Question, what is the substance of fear? Fear.
Resistance to progress. Fear disables our ability of mind and body. Firstly, to withstand the situation. Secondly, to make any sense out of it. And thirdly, to progress or to use the situation for any significant progress. Fear is just disabling the ability, and even though the sense of fear obviously seems to belong to the sphere of mind, but because mind for its function depends on the condition of nervous system, the fear of impulse to start in the mind has its origin in the physical system. Somewhere, some physical area of nervous system starts to function abnormally. Abnormally. And that abnormal activity in some area of nervous system produces a corresponding abnormal activity in the mind. We say abnormal, not subnormal. Subnormal activity in the mind can only reduce dynamism. But it will not induce negativity. Fear is a great negative element. The introduction of this negative element, which not only stops progress or evolution, but tends to retard the existing state of evolution. So, this element of fear belongs to the region of negative impulse, and this belongs to the area of abnormal functioning of the mind, which then results from the abnormal functioning of nervous system. Whatever be the reason, the reasons could be varied and innumerable. But whenever in some area of nervous system some abnormality creeps up, the mind starts gaining negative impulses. Then the activity of the mind is of that negative character. And negative character may include all kinds of things which are damaging to life and progress. Fear, anger, disharmony, hatred, jealousy, all kinds of negative qualities are the result of some abnormal function of nervous system. And therefore, if we are confronted with any of these negative impulses in the mind, we better close the eyes and sit easily, comfortably, and that innocent state of mind will pick up some physical sensation in the nervous system, be it in the heart or mind or somewhere, and attending to that, the abnormal functioning of nervous system starts to get more life energy. When the attention reaches there, maybe I am feeling a sensation here, the sensation, and when the attention reaches there, when the mind starts feeling it, means the attention has reached this area. When the attention reaches this area, more life energy is supplied. All abnormality of functioning is due to lack of coordination of mind and body in that area. The principle is that the body is the projection of the mind, and as long as there is a good coordination between the body and the mind, normal health will be the result. In any particular area, if the coordination of the body and mind becomes less, this lack of thorough coordination between body and mind results in abnormal functioning of that area. Now what happens? When the mind leaves the body, when the soul leaves the body starts to decay. The abnormality of functioning is so much that it just can't maintain its integrity, it starts to decay. This is what happens at the time of death. So, total discoordination of mind and body results in complete decay of the system. Partial dislocation of the coordination results in abnormal functioning. And when the mind attends to that from outside, attends to that, then this lack of coordination is removed. When the attention reaches that area, then the coordination of the body, of the mind and that area becomes stronger. Strengthening of this coordination starts enriching that area with more life energy. The result is that the abnormality is eliminated more quickly and more thoroughly. This is the principle behind the healing influenced by attending to that area of disease. Now it's our common experience. If the executive of a business does not attend to one side of the business, one shop, after some time that shop begins to decay. The executive has to take his attention to every aspect of business and then every aspect of business is alert. If a factory manager, general manager of a big factory, if he doesn't look to the incoming of the raw material and the production and the sales thing and all the whole thing, any area, three main areas of business, bringing the raw material to the factory, production in the factory and sales out of factory. If the general manager does not put his attention in any one of these areas for some time, that aspect begins to be slum. It's very natural. The same thing is with the factory of the body. If the owner does not take his attention here or there, then the area begins to cry. And the cry is to call for his attention. Pain is just the natural invitation for the mind to look to that area. If the mind has not been attending to that area, then that area starts aching, paining, suffering. And that suffering is a natural invitation for the mind to look there. And when the mind responds to the natural call and mind attends to that, it begins to heal up. The child cries if mother doesn't attend to it. Just the attention of the mother starts strengthening the spirit of the child. The child starts becoming stronger. So the attention to be brought on the area of suffering just strengthens the coordination of the body and mind and thereby eliminates the abnormal function which has started to develop in that area. Is it all right? You see, the story of attention and suffering. It's a very beautiful point that you bring. Now, when we are meditating, then what we are doing? We are bringing our attention from the gross levels of experience to the subtle levels of experience, to the subtlest level of experience, to the transcendental, omnipresent field of life. When we are taking our attention from the gross creation to the subtle creation to the transcendent, then we are bringing our awareness to all the subtle regions of our personality. And in doing so, what we are doing? We are allowing all the gross and subtle layers of our nervous system to function very promptly and very effectively. All the gross and subtle regions of our nervous system have to function very promptly and very correctly, very fully, in order to give a mental perception corresponding to that level. And because our attention is crossing through all the levels, gross and subtle, so we are allowing our nervous system to function most effectively at all the levels of nervous system, gross and subtle, subtle, subtle. And this is more than coordinating the mind and body. This is more than coordinating the mind and body in a silent manner by bringing the attention to the to the aching area. Because here we are not only quietly bringing the attention to that, as a matter of fact, we are not bringing the attention to this area of the body, but we are creating a situation that all the gross and subtle regions of the physical structure are functioning in their most efficient way in order to give a corresponding experience to the mind. So we are not only strengthening the coordination, but improving the function of the whole system of meditation for every area of it in the most effective way. And therefore, when we are meditating, we don't have to bring our attention to the body. It's enough that we bring our attention to the infinite. When we take round the world ticket, then every big aerodrome we can stop. When we are taking our awareness to the infinite, then all the time-space-bound individual spheres of life are taken care of spontaneously, naturally. That's why we don't have to bother with bringing our attention to the body when we are bringing our attention to the infinite value of our life. We are opening to the absolute and we don't have to open to the body. Because the body gets opened to the infinite spontaneously. This is how the process of meditation is much more effective for normal functioning of the nervous system than the process of bringing the attention to the diseased areas of the body. Yes? I think with the same formula of allowing the whole system to function as efficiently as it can by bringing our awareness from the gross state of thought to the transcendent being. What happens is, if a leaf begins to be dry, that is the signal for danger, signal of danger for the whole tree. If one petal of a flower begins to show some signs of decay, it is the signal of danger for all the petals of the flower. So, it is wise for the gardener not to enter into a field of impossibility. If he starts attending to different leaves, any leaf that is dying, attend to that, attend to that, attend to that, he's entering into an area of impossibility. Thousands are the leaves and thousands are the branches. By attending to each leaf, he will not be able to bring life, energy and nourishment to all the leaves. And therefore, he has to take a formula whereby he can bring nourishment not only to the drying leaf, but to all the leaves which are going to dry following this example of the drying leaf. So, if some limb is weak, we start strengthening the whole body. Because weakness of a limb has to do with every other part of the body. Every other part of the body. For such cases, I would recommend yoga asanas. These asanas, these postures, bending back and forth. They are very simple physical poses, but they are very good to firstly make this whole physical structure flexible and then strong. Coupled with meditation, which energizes the system from within. If there is some weakness of the body here and there, in some limb here and there, we put the body to the physical exercises, say 10, 15, 20 minutes of these asanas and some of the breathing exercise and meditation. Then we take care of the personality from all aspects, physical and mental, and gain energy from the spiritual. That will be all right.
Five-year program? Yes. When you have that feeling, I said when you have it, then what you do is this. Sit down and close your eyes. And there could be something going on in the body somewhere. Maybe in the throat or in the heart area, somewhere. And just for 5-10 minutes, feel the body. And you'll find the desire to do that diminished. Not meditating, but just this feeling of the body. And if you do give this a chance, a little longer, you'll find a much more rewarding experience and program than otherwise. See, for so many years, we've been engaged in what we call living, action, reaction, and we use our physical body. There are so many things which become habits, particularly those things which provide some relief of the senses, some pleasure, some greater satisfaction. And once we start meditating, we start refining the nervous system very, very systematically. Now that doesn't mean that all these desires are automatically wiped out, or these habituated areas. They do continue. The same with our knowledge. It's really very interesting. At every level of consciousness, we have certain knowledge. Now our consciousness can keep expanding. We do progress, but it doesn't guarantee that our knowledge will also progress along with our state of consciousness. A man gains cosmic consciousness or enlightenment. It doesn't mean he has the knowledge, the right knowledge to support that state of consciousness. That's why
Maybe there are 10 realized men, 10 men who have gained this state which we will examine this afternoon. And this state of enlightenment does not mean that those 10 men will agree on the same points, or that they'll have the same philosophy or the same interpretation, intellectually speaking. As far as the nervous system is concerned, as far as their state of consciousness, state of development is concerned, it's the same. But the expression of that, the manifestation of that, can vary 10 times for 10 men. That's why you find today Maharishi bringing about a revival of the basic teaching of life, and some men who are considered to be realized men not agreeing with him. Those men had attained their own realization in their own time, not under any systematic tradition. You will not find realized man today on earth teaching something other than transcendental meditation, who has been brought up into his enlightenment through the Shankaracharya tradition. Because it's this tradition which is responsible for the world's enlightenment. It is this tradition which is called into action when the state of human life on earth is threatened by its own state, by its own state of tension and frustration, which is restricting its progress. Anytime life on earth becomes such that it restricts the progress of evolution, then we find the tradition which is responsible for world enlightenment coming into action, called into action by the need of nature. And this is the Shankaracharya tradition. Now, it's possible to gain enlightenment in other ways, certainly. In terms of other intellectual orientation, certainly. But as far as a worldwide technique that can be practiced by anyone, anytime, anywhere, it's this technique. So we inherit what we do each day for the next day. We keep inheriting everything that we've done in the past. And you cannot wipe it out overnight. If we have been ignorant and ignorant and ignorant and ignorant based upon states of consciousness which were less than enlightened, suddenly when enlightenment is gained, that is a state of consciousness, but we may not have automatically also the right intellectual interpretation of that state. So our discussion about it may be off the track. There are always these two things, experience and knowledge. Experience and knowledge. And one doesn't mean that you get the other. Two separate things. A man can have wide experience and not be able to correlate all the different experiences, may not understand the experience. Experience is just a mechanical process. And this technique of transcendental meditation is simply a mechanical process. It's not a philosophy, it's not an intellectualization of anything. It's a mechanical process, we can even call it a physiological process, which refines the nervous system to support expanded state of consciousness. That's all. Now, as to understanding it and having the right intellectual knowledge about it, that is another thing. And it's very interesting that the expression of intellectual knowledge about it does not necessarily indicate the state of consciousness of the individual. One man can be more highly evolved. And evolution means the state of consciousness. It doesn't mean the intellectual understanding. One man can be more highly evolved and not able to talk about transcendental meditation. He just doesn't know quite how to express himself about it, or he may say some wrong points about it. May be very wrong on certain understanding about transcendental meditation, and yet he is more highly evolved than another man who can speak very well about transcendental meditation. We don't want to take the expressions, the intellectual understanding or lack of understanding as an indication of evolution.